Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat, part of the Triple Play Fantasy Network. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Chris Torres. I'll be your host today. I'll be joined by my co-host, Mike Carter, shortly. In today's episode, we'll be talking to Gary Phillips of the New York Daily News, talking all things Yankees. And in our second segment, Mike and I will be breaking down the recent chaos across bullpens and MLB. We'll help you figure out who to target for your upcoming drafts or if you're doing fab this weekend. But let me bring in Mike. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing okay, Chris. It's cold. Still winter in Chicago, even though baseball season has started here at the high school level. Proud to report that the Batavia freshmen, co-led by me, are 4-0. So off to a good start. Shout out to my guys on the freshman squad.
Manager of the year right here, baby. I expect nothing less. All right, well, let's get right to it. We've got Gary here with us again. Gary Phillips is a beat writer for the New York Yankees at the New York Daily News. We are excited. This is his second time on the show. So, Gary, we know you're busy, but we appreciate you taking a few minutes for us this evening. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you guys having me back on. Excited to do it.
Well, you're referring to the program now, so.
Do I get a special pin for that, or?
Gary? I'm going to put this out there right now. I know you put out a tweet about the new food offerings at Yankee Stadium. I saw that. And there was one thing in particular, and I think you made a comment about it, that sweet spot bowl. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Good. That sounded pretty good. The carne asada.
Sounded good. Mm-hmm. Mike, you had carne asada with plantains, with rice and beans. Like, I'm going to a game just to get that. But how about this, Gary? Since you've been on twice, when I go to a game this summer, I'm going to send you a message. One of those sweet spot bowls on me. All right. So awesome. I'm telling you that right now.
I appreciate it. I look forward to it.
Costs $35.
Probably. That's all right.
All right. Well, Gary, the question is really on everybody's mind, I think. I mean, and the Yankees have a lot of them right now, but I think the question that's front and center for most folks is the Gerrit Cole situation. What's the vibe that you're getting on that? When do you think we can expect to see him back? And I guess as a corollary to that, do you expect to see him back?
So, yes, I expect to see him back. The Yankees expect to see him back. Now, right now, he is dealing with nothing more than elbow inflammation and, you know, in his nerves, a little bit of swelling as well. He said last week he's going to be no throw for 3 to 4 weeks. And then Brian Cashman added that he's probably going to need a full spring training type of period to ramp up and get ready for the start of his season. So best case scenario, we're looking at late May, early June, the Yankees will have the reigning Cy Young winner back on the mound. As far as the vibe goes, now Cashman called this the second best case scenario for the Yankees, right? You know, the first best case scenario would be if Cole was healthy and wasn't dealing with anything at all. So there was a lot of concern when the MRI was announced and then these other tests followed and days went by without any information, there was a lot of concern that there was going to be something much worse here. So I think this is a win for the Yankees. I think it's a win for Cole. And as of right now, based on what is being said and, you know, the plan in front of Cole, Yankee fans should expect to see him back sometime in the first half.
That's great news.
Just be like upfront though about these injuries. I would imagine as a beat writer, you don't have to comment on it, you know, but I would imagine that's got to be super, super frustrating to get all of these different, you know, like with Judge. Oh, well, the plan was for him to get 2 at-bats. Oh, no, actually, he pulled something, but he'll be back tomorrow. Oh, now he's not swinging for a week. You know, it's just like, why can't they just be upfront about what's going on? I don't know. Again, you don't have to comment on that. It's just a frustration as a fan.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I will say this because fans notice this stuff. It's not just the beat writers, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you're saying it. I get tweets about it. We all get tweets about it on the beat. Everything is a big secret, whether it's, you know, what a guy's rehab plan is or when somebody's going to be back in the lineup. So all we can do is ask and try to, you know, and poke around if we don't think we're getting direct information or concrete information. You know, I think if you read my work, anytime I'm writing about injuries or returns to the lineup or, you know, rehab plans, those kind of things, I'll always make sure that I attribute a piece of information to whoever said it. Aaron Boone said, Brian Cashman claimed, Aaron Judge insisted, you know, because a lot of times, as you're pointing out, things tend to not follow through. So it is what it is. It's something we all deal with.
Yeah, no, I hear you. All right. I wanted to ask you about an article that you actually, it was published today in the paper. I found it really interesting. It was an article about Carlos Rodon and a little bit off the field stuff about work that his wife, him and his wife and his foundation are doing to support couples that are seeking out in vitro fertilization, especially, you know, with everything going on with the recent ruling in Alabama. And just it seems like this is something that is important to them, and they're obviously contributing money towards to support couples in search of that treatment. So just want to ask you, Gary, what in researching and writing that story, what was something that you may have learned about Carlos Rodon or something that really stuck out about him?
Yeah, so I had spoken to Carlos and Ashley last year when he first joined the team, kind of a big profile on who he is. I had noticed he had volunteered for this mental health PSA that Major League Baseball was doing. And I kind of asked him why, you know, was it just something he volunteered for or was it important to him? And he said it kind of was something he just raised his hand for because the Yankees needed a representative. But then we started talking more and more and he realized like how he had been, you know, affected by mental health, how his wife had been affected by it, how his community back home in Indiana had, and with the family, with the Rodons, you know, Carlos had a lot of injuries and that was a tough time for him earlier in his career with the White Sox. And then Ashley had suffered multiple miscarriages before the birth of their first child. And they've since had two more kids, through natural means. But prior to the birth of their first child, Willow, they had considered IVF, which I didn't know. And they were telling me how that option, that possibility gave them peace of mind. And they were, you know, they were hopeful that that was going to be how they started their family up until 2 weeks before they were about to start the process. They found out they were pregnant with Willow, who, you know, came to be and was born and healthy and all that. So they started a grant in Willow's name, the Willow Grant, that they offer through their foundation and another foundation called the Nest Egg Foundation. And basically it seeks out applicants who have gone through similar struggles, you know, recurrent pregnancy loss, people with lesser means than they have. And it's just an important cause to them and a way that they're looking to give back. But as you had mentioned, you know, this is an issue that is really in the news right now after a ruling by the Alabama Supreme Court back in February. So Ashley had mentioned the grant to me over the off season. It was right before the winter meetings. My focus was elsewhere. I wasn't around. I circled back when all this started popping up in the news. And I said to her, well, I'd still be interested in spotlighting this, but you know, it can't just be, hey, here's your charity and your foundation and this great thing you're doing. You know, it's, we got to also look at the political elements, the religious elements, you know, that tie into the broader issue here. And I got to give them credit because both Ashley and Carlos were very willing to engage on those topics. So I appreciated the candor and yeah, it wasn't really a baseball story at all, but something where I learned a lot and hopefully anybody who read it learned a lot as well.
Yeah, you really did a great job with it. I definitely recommend people check that out.
Yeah, it's a great human interest story. And they're having been in Chicago here for a number of years, they're really great people and really were actively involved in the community. So great story there. Okay, Gary, so we like to do lightning round. And we did this with you last time and you were really great at it. So we decided to pull it out again and do it with you. So I'm going to ask you a question and Chris is going to ask you some questions too. Just a one-word answer, over, under, or fill in the blank, okay? So that's kind of the criteria. I'm a school teacher by trade, so I got to give a quiz. Okay, First question I have, Luis Gil, over under 10 starts?
Over.
Ooh, that's interesting. Does Ben Rice get to the majors this season?
Maybe.
Ooh.
I think a lot would have to break his way, but I'm not going to rule it out.
Gotcha. What's your favorite thing to eat at Yankee Stadium?
So typically we eat in the press box just for convenience. There's a cafeteria with fresh food in there that they serve and we pay for. Every once in a while they serve lamb chops in there. I know ballpark lamb chops probably sounds insane, but they're good. They're good. So it's always a treat when those are out.
And it's better than what I'm going to eat tonight. That's for sure. player with the second most saves behind Clay Holmes.
Ian Hamilton.
I like that choice. And my last one, who is your best interview on the Yankees?
It depends what you're looking for or what the subject is. But if we're just talking like good vibes, it's Oswaldo Cabrera, and he is leading the pack, by far.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. He seems like a cool dude. All right, couple more for you here. Austin Wells, over under 300 at-bats?
Over.
Best thing about being a beat writer?
All right, this sounds one word. In one word,
The people. All right. Minor league breakout player this season for the Yankees.
So Will Warren's obviously competing for the fifth starter job. And then Caleb Durbin, an infielder. He's a guy who's made a lot of fans in the organization this spring.
Interesting. Okay. Worst thing about being a beat writer?
Transcribing.
Hmm.
That applies to every journalism job, though.
Yep, for sure. An under-the-radar player who may surprise us this season?
I think Cody Petit's going to make an impact in some way.
Cody Petit. All right. And last one, the Yankees win blank games this year.
92.
Okay. All right. We'll take it. All right. Sounds good. Well, we'll get you out of here on that. Just want to let people know where you could find Gary on X. He's at Gary H. Phillips. And also recommend checking out his article that he put out today, like we talked about. Also, New York Daily News right now has a spring sale going on, $3 for a year. All right. That's a pretty good deal. So if you want to. Pretty cheap. Yeah. So if you want to check out Gary's coverage, get great coverage of the Mets, the Yankees, you could get their all digital access for $3 for the entire year. Not bad at all. Gary, thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Looking forward to doing it again.
All right. Take care.
Awesome. Thanks, Gary.
Mike, let's roll, baby. I put down here to take a break, but you good to go?
Who needs a break, baby?
I'm with you.
I'm with you. We're talking baseball. I do want to point out, though, I know that nobody's looking at it. We don't have video, thank God, because then nobody has to look at
thank
me.
Thank God.
But I wanted to point out that I'm wearing my friend Dave Fitzgerald, who lives in New York, who, by way of Yonkers, made me this shirt last year because he and I would get into protracted battles about Joey Gallo and how badly you guys treated Joey Gallo in New York. And he made me this shirt. I think you can see it. It says, it's a picture of Joey Gallo with a Dodger hat on that says 56 hits and a picture of Aaron Judge that says 62 home runs.
That is awesome. He got it made for me.
Yeah, he had it made for me. And it's a big size too, because he knows that I'm a fat ass. So he was okay sending it that way. But isn't that great? So like I was talking about how Joey Gallo has value in certain leagues and Dave just wasn't buying it. You guys would get along. Like, I think that would be worlds colliding for me because you're both really like anxious, negative Yankees fans waiting for the drama. Like,
we would be insufferable for sure.
You can't celebrate. Like Gary just said, you guys are going to win 92 games. You're like, oh shit, is that all? Come on. I was hoping you were going to say 106.
I would take 92, bro. I would take 92 without a doubt.
That'll win that division.
Yeah. Yeah. But all right, man, let's get into some closer talk. This is your area of expertise.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, I don't really have an area of expertise. Okay. It's just,
if there is one, this is it. All right. Okay. Let's be fair.
Okay. Okay. I'll go with that.
There's a lot to talk about. We've had a lot of upheaval in these bullpens, a lot of injuries between Devin Williams, Jordan Romano, Kenley Jansen, there's Joanne Duran. So we got to figure out what the hell we're doing with these bullpens, because we got Fab coming up this weekend. If you've already drafted, a lot of us still have drafts coming up as well. So there's could be a lot of nice values. If you're drafting this weekend, I don't know. I think there's enough uncertainty with these bullpens that, you know, if you hit on the right guy in the later rounds, that could really, really be a boon for your team. So, so help us figure it out. So what I did was just make a list of some of these potential closing options. And I guess the first thing I'd like you to do is just to rank them, and then we could discuss each one a little bit more. But I've got Yimi Garcia and Chad Green in Toronto, Joel Piamps, Trevor McGill, Abner Uribe in Milwaukee. In Boston, the only guy, I don't know, I assume it's Chris Martin. Put him on the list here. And in Minnesota, got Griffin Jacks and Brock Stewart. So give me your rank. If you were drafting this weekend, you're in the, 20th round, and you want to get a closer spec, give me a rank or tell me how you would rank those guys.
Yeah, so I think that that's a really, really, really good question. So without knowing exactly what the injury toll is going to take here, I think obviously Milwaukee is probably the one that is the one that you're going to be in most need of. So if you drafted Devin Williams a lot like I did, you're going to be looking for somebody to replace him.
You're the kiss of death, bro. Jeez.
I know. So, well, and I had, I've got Cole and Glarf, he was my first pick. I designed my whole KDS around drafting Cole. Yeah. Go figure. So, but I think of this group, the one that I will say will probably surprise people, and I said it last night on the Triple Play podcast, but I think Trevor McGill is going to be the closer in Milwaukee. And the reason why I think that is because he's got the nastiest arm. He has high velocity. He's a 31-year-old veteran. They don't really care if they blow him out or they burn him out. Piamps has really struggled this spring and is really a better setup guy. And the thing that I would posit with Piamps is this, Chris, and I'm curious if you agree with me or not. If you go back and look over the last 8 or 10 years, there's always a setup guy or two or three that have lights out years that are never able to repeat it. So Piamps strikes me as a guy who was a journeyman who then came to Milwaukee, uncovered something different for himself, was in a great role, featured in a great role. I just don't see him making that transition to the closer role. And Uribe, obviously, if anybody is listening or reads my stuff that I write about, Uribe is a guy that I've been really high on. He's 23. There's some arbitration considerations here to think about as well with him. Do they really want to start that clock on him getting saves? If they go from a pure stuff standpoint, Uribe is the guy. If they go the way that we think they're going to go, I think it's McGill. And I think that a lot of bullpen analysts are kind of leaning that way too, just based in conversations that I've had with a couple of them off the record. I think it's McGill there. When you talk about the Toronto situation, it sounds like the Romano injury, last I heard, was not considered to be a serious injury. I like the fact that you bring Chad Green into the mix, because I feel like he flies under the radar as a guy who's done the job, as a guy that's been a high-octane reliever for years. Now, not recently because he's had trouble, but he came back last year and was pretty effective for Toronto. He and Garcia probably both feature better as setup guys. My hunch here is that if you had to pick one, it would be Garcia, just based on more familiarity with the role, the recency bias that goes along with that. But I'm going to put this one out there for you too. Where is Nate Pearson? Why can't we get a Nate Pearson sighting in Toronto? He's 27 years old. It's time to take the muzzle off and let this guy go eat. Like, can we just go see what he is? Because to me, he's a guy that could close on a lot of different teams and quite easily. So I'm going to throw that out there as well. One thing that I want to add about the Devin Williams thing that I did not say earlier was that, our good friend of the program, good friend of mine, Dave Funnel, has really looked at this injury in depth and really feels that Williams will not pitch at all this year. So if you're thinking about stashing Williams right now, the advice that I would give you is just to cut bait. I mean, he's not even going to do anything for 3 months. Remember, this was an injury that he had at the end of the year last year, and they did nothing about it but give it rest, and the rest didn't work. So something to think about there. And your last group, you know, Chris Martin is an interesting guy because I think that Boston at some point, I would think, is probably going to trade Kenley if he's healthy. We've been waiting for the demise of Kenley Jansen for years. My guess would be that if they do go that route, that they would probably also trade Martin as well. If they don't, Martin could step into that role, as you're pointing out here in the notes. But another thing to kind of consider here is that Martin is not a young guy either. You know, he's 38 years old, and he might get traded to a contender as well. So a name to kind of watch here, to earmark, is Justin Slayton, who is a Rule 5 pick that's on the roster that they will be forced to keep. But Alex Cora has been glowing about this guy and saying every situation that they put him in, he has produced. Does that mean he can close? I don't know. I don't know that. But that's a guy that I would be kind of thinking about earmarking here as well. Again, for those of you that are paying attention to anything that I might say, Justin Slayton is a guy that could be there for the Red Sox. And they also have Liam Hendricks in the mix too, who's recovering from Tommy John surgery, but is always a quick study in recovery. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they decided to move on from Jansen and Martin, and then when Hendricks is ready, bring him back later in the summer. It looks like he might be able to get back by late August with the way he's talking and going. And then Minnesota, go ahead.
I was just going to say real quick, Chris Cotillo had mentioned Justin Slayton as a guy to watch in that bullpen when I had him on last week. So definitely a guy who kind of coming out of nowhere, but I know he's on a lot of radars just because of his performance this spring. So, I just feel like that Boston there's a lot of opportunity there. I talked about this last week when I was breaking down my draft. Like, I have no faith in Kenley Jansen this year. Mm-hmm. I just feel like Chris Cotillo had mentioned that he's just unhappy in Boston. Like, there's just bad vibes all around.
Yeah.
You know, and like he's not healthy. He's not happy there. There's trade rumors. Like, I just have a hard time believing that he's going to get. Like, it just feels like there's a lot of ways where this could go wrong. So I want to be positioned to take advantage of this bullpen, assuming it's not him. So, definitely in on Slayton. But I'm sorry, you were going to say something about the Milwaukee bullpen.
No. We talked about Milwaukee. I was going to bring up Minnesota. You know, my friend Jeff Zimmerman, who is as good as they come in the analyst world, who I got a chance to share a slice of pizza with at Tout Wars this past weekend in New York City, did some talking about these things in his Minding the News. And like, if you're not reading Minding the News, you need to change that. But one of the things that he brought up this week was that with Duran out and looking like he's going to miss at least a month at this point, that Griffin Jacks and Brock Stewart are in the mix for closing. They've got a really strong relief core there. In Minnesota, Duran's out, Fielbar's out, which hurts, but they also have brought in guys like Jay Jackson, who is a guy who flies under the radar a lot, who was very successful in Toronto last year, and Justin Topa, who they brought in from Seattle, Washington, to be one of their guys there too. So it would not surprise me at all to see that be a committee, but I will say this. Jax is really good in the role that he had setting up, and Stewart is really intriguing because he unlocked a whole new like cheat level last year with his velocity was insane last year, and he got hurt. But before he was hurt, he was the best guy in their bullpen, including Duran. So it's an interesting thing to watch out there. I mean, Rocco Baldelli said, "Oh, you know, we can do a timeshare kind of thing or whatever and see what happens." It would not surprise me at all, even though Jax has the ability to close, if Stewart was the guy there. I think a cheap fab bid on Stewart might be okay this weekend, or Jax, or both, depending on how you're kind of looking at it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, thanks for breaking that down. That you know, that was helpful. I think there's just so much opportunity here, you know, like all these guys, I think the majority of them are going around like pick 300 or later. Mm-hmm. So if I'm doing it, I am doing a draft tomorrow. I'm doing my main event tomorrow, but it, you know, my plan is going to be take a couple shots, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm past round 20, good chance of not keeping those players anyway. Right. So I might as take a couple shots. And if I hit, that's going to be huge, you know? Well, so
yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about it this way, Chris, right? I mean, you know, we're talking about these things, and if we're looking at extended absences for these guys that are top 10 level closers, right? You've got Duran, you've got Romano, who, I mean, balky back last year, balky arm, elbow right now. That doesn't bode well, even if he recovers from this one. Right. Devin Williams potentially out for the year. Bednar late, kind of getting started with arm trouble. You start taking away these top 10 guys, all of a sudden there's a bunch of other guys that kind of get injected into the conversation as guys that all of a sudden look really good, you know, that maybe you were thinking lesser of earlier. So with all these arm injuries that started happening, like over the weekend, I had like three drafts going on. I got Clay Holmes in two of them. All of a sudden, he looks pretty good to me, right? Like he's got the job. He's stable. We kind of know what he is. They're going to be pretty good. The chances of him getting 30 saves, I would say, are pretty high, right? So all of a sudden, you got a guy like that that just is kind of, okay, well, I was thinking of him as my closer two. Maybe now, if I get him as a closer one and get one of these other guys, I'm still in the mix because the saves are going to be dispersed so much if these guys, in fact, do stay injured. And that's not even considering the fact that we've got Ryan Helsley, who's a question mark with health, Adbert Alsilay, who was hurt at the end of last year and had forearm trouble in September. That doesn't just go away, bro. Like, those are things that we got to kind of take a look at here. So all of a sudden, you know, getting a Clay Holmes or maybe an Alex Lang, if he figures out how to locate that curveball and cut the walk rate, maybe they're not such bad gambles after all. And I love your idea of when you get to round 20, spec bids on some of these guys, right? Jordan Leisure, who you and I have talked about for the White Sox, is a guy, he's a rookie, but he's 25. They're not going to waste time. If this guy shows that he can do the job, he's going to get the job. Who's going to close day one? Steven Wilson? Come on.
Well, the question though is, are the White Sox going to win a game? Right.
Well, Hawk Harrelson, who is one of the worst announcers of all time, right? And a total homer for Chicago, always said something that was really interesting to me. No matter what you do in baseball, you're going to win 60 and you're going to lose 60. It's the other 40 that really end up making the difference in your season, right? Like, and that's right on. So I know that I'm on my soapbox about this stuff, but guys like that, closers that are have certain roles right now and look to be healthy are guys that you can maybe speculate on. I would speculate the hell out of Mason Miller right now too. I mean, he's looked great in camp. I mean, they said that they want to slow him down and pump the brakes, but he doesn't even look like he needs the training wheels right now. Like, I think he's another guy that if you're kind of looking for a spec, would be a good guy to take a look at.
Yeah, I actually got him in. I did a main event qualifier on Tuesday, and he was my second closer. I got Munoz first and then went with Mason Miller. And, you know, we talked about all draft season, how like doing these DCs where you can't make moves. Like, I thought the play was you get two up top, right? Because I'm not interested in wasting a bunch of later round picks on specs. Like, I just want my two, you know, surefire closers, so to speak, and just leaving it there. I don't know. I think it's kind of changing now. Number one, because if you're doing fab leagues and you can pick up players off the wire, obviously the dynamics change, but also just the recent turnover. Like you were saying, if saves are more dispersed, I think it is more viable to just maybe get one up top and then speculate, you know? Another quick point in regards to Mason Miller, you know, I think maybe there's a little bit of a stigma because he's on Oakland, and I think it's possible, and you tell me if I'm wrong, we may be overrating, like, I was joking about the White Sox thing, like, yeah, they're a bad team, but like, they're still going to get, like, the closer's still going to get saves. And I think from the research that I've seen, it's not like a really direct correlation between saves and team wins. As long as a team is not like historically bad, you know, like I think the Oakland A's last year kind of fell into that category. Like, I don't want to mess with the Oakland A's, you know, they're so bad, but the team is not like they're better this year. Like they can win, I don't know, 65 games maybe. but I just think that we may be shying away from these closers on bad teams, and it may not be, it may be going too far, you know. And I think Mason Miller, just given the skills that he's shown and the fact that there's really no other viable options, at least like this spring, nobody else has really stepped up to take that role. Mm-hmm. And he's been awesome. I think he's looking like a nice pick where he's going. I got him around like pick 200 a few nights ago, so I was pretty happy with that.
I like that. I like that a lot. I mean, I think that that's something that can be really helpful to you. I mean,
and then I got Yimi Garcia in the 29th round, just as kind of like, hey, let's see what happens. Right.
Well, so. to your point, Chris, I was just looking it up as you were talking, and you know, last year obviously the A's were a pretty bad team, but they had 29 saves.
Yeah. Trevor May was very useful for a while.
Yeah, Trevor May had 21 of those, and was a professional pitcher. And tip of the cap to him for all the stuff that he did, shining a bright light on mental health stuff like you and I are trying to do all the time. But
you got to get him on the pod, by the way. You work your magic, right?
Well, you and I can talk about that off air.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right.
Yeah, but long story short, you know, you. Even a bad team is going to probably have 25 saves. Somebody, I don't know who it's going to be, but the White Sox are going to have 25 saves, and it might be spread among five guys, but they're going to have 25 saves. And if you can hit on, if a guy like Leisure gets 12, you might win. You might win the league, right? If Kopech, I don't think Kopech can really close, but I've said it. I mean, I willed him into the bullpen. I willed that into existence just because that's all he can really do. But somebody's going to get saves, and they're going to be bad. But I'll tell you one thing about the White Sox that's going to be interesting. They're going to catch the ball. I don't know how much they're going to hit, and I don't know how much they're going to stop other teams from hitting. But they will. Their defense is going to be way better than it's been in a really long time. I just don't know if they're going to score any runs.
I don't know. They've got some hitters, though, man. Like, it's not like completely – you know, like you've got professional hit. You got Benintendi. I think Makata is going to be decent this year, assuming health. Eloy.
He's going to be a Yankee. Makata is going to end up being a Yankee.
Bro, when you texted me that, I was like, yes, because the Yankees need a better option at third base. I think LeMahieu is...
He's better than DJ LeMahieu.
He's better than DJ LeMahieu, and LeMahieu is just... He can't stay healthy either, so... Yankees need to make a move, but that's another story. But yeah, I think the White Sox, they're not going to be great, obviously, but they could be competitive. So if you hit on somebody in that bullpen, I think it could definitely could provide some nice value there. All right, Mike, we're going to talk about Tat Wars. Unfortunately, I got to get going here, but we're not going to skip out on our mental health minute. So tell me, over the past couple weeks here, what have you been doing to take care of your mental health?
You know, I'll loop that into what I was going to talk about with Tout Wars anyway, because here's the thing. So I went out, I got invited to draft Doug Anderson's team, who edits at Fantrax, Roto Daddy, one of the legends of fantasy baseball, in my opinion. And I got invited to draft his team because he couldn't go to New York. And so I did. And I got to New York on Friday, spent the day with friends out in New Jersey, and went to the thing on Saturday. And I can tell you that the fantasy baseball community is a community that really wraps its arms around people and is really there to help take care of people and talk to folks. And I walked in there with an imposter syndrome really, really big. And the people who ran it, Jeff Erickson and Ron Chandler and Todd Zola and Peter Kreutzer and all the guys that were part of that, couldn't have been nicer to me, couldn't have been more welcoming to me, and asking me how I felt I did after it was over. And you know how it is, Chris, right? Like, you can walk into a room, and if you have a decent idea what you're doing drafting, you walk in and you sit down, there's always nerves a little bit, right? Because you don't know the room, you don't know exactly how it's going to go or whatever. After about five or six guys got thrown out and I got the hang of it and got the pacing of it, I felt like I was part of the crowd. Mm-hmm. And that was because of the people that were in the room. And there's some unbelievable players in that room, but let me tell you something. They're also unbelievable people. And that's what I really took away from it more than anything, is how lucky we are to be part of this quote unquote industry, whatever that means to people. How lucky we are to have made the friendships that you and I have, the friendships that I have with other people that are part of this industry that I consider friends, people that I've never met before directly that I met this weekend after how many years, 4 or 5 years of knowing them online or knowing them via pods. And it really did my mind and my body good, bro. Like it was really, it was a time where like spring in schools is no joke. Anybody who's working at a school right now knows that. And that really was a thing that I did for me. And I just, I don't do a lot for me. I don't, I'm a giver. I work a couple of jobs. I have my kids and my wife at home and they all encouraged me to go and do this. They know that this is something that I have a passion for, that I like doing. It's a great hobby. It keeps me off the streets. It keeps me off of hard drugs. Right. I mean, these are the things that I really need to be able to do to take care of myself. And so those are great things. The only thing I missed this weekend was that you and I didn't get a chance to hook up because of the schedule. But I'm going to be out there in June again, probably, it looks like right now. And that's going to happen. And that I now that I know how to work the New Jersey transit system a little bit and work Penn Station, which is mind boggling. I'm a Chicago person. It's mind boggling. You come out. I didn't realize. Here's what I didn't realize. You want to know how stupid I am? You come out of Penn. What's on top of you? Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, MSG. Yeah.
I didn't know that. I'm 50 years old. I walk out. I'm like, what the hell is that? Oh my God, that's Madison Square Garden. It's great. New York is really the adult portion. Other than the smell of urine, trash, and weed everywhere. Yes. Everywhere.
We walked
to the party, and it was literally. I had a contact high when I walked in. I'm like, I need some wings. It was wild. But that's what I did for myself, and I'm still feeling really good about that. So, Chris, how about you, man? I know it's a hard time of year for a lot of people. Springtime, you know, stuff going on. What have you been doing for taking care of yourself?
Well, I was going to talk about exercise, which I've been doing more of, which is good. Mm-hmm. And I don't need to really go into, you know, detail. Like, everybody knows it's beneficial. It's just a matter of doing it, right? But hearing you talk about just the fantasy community and, you know, making these connections, it's got me thinking about, how that's been beneficial to me as well. And, you know, even like before I came on, it was just a really nice thing. Our friend Nathan Grimm, who we've had on the pod, you know, me and him are actually sharing, two draft champions teams this year, and
I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah. He's just a super, really, really just genuine, nice guy. We have similar like sense of humor, you know, like we just connect, and he just offered, like I told him I was drafting my main and he was like, hey man, you need help with anything? Like you need, and I was just like, wow, that's like really cool. That was really nice just to be like, he's like, yeah, whatever I can do to help. I'm like, wow. You know, like just didn't expect that. So like, I think it's just been really cool. You know, we've talked about this as being part of the industry. I don't even like that term.
Whatever. I know. Community. I don't like it either. That's why. Yeah. That's why I put it in quotes. It's
community. Because the industry sounds more like intimidating than it is.
That's a good point. But I like that community. Let's use that.
Yeah. But just like making connections with people. And listen, there's a lot of bullshit in the community. Stuff that, you know, I don't want to be a part of. But like, there's a lot of good, too. And I don't want that to be overshadowed, and just like meeting people, you know, I know I could reach out to you anytime, or and I feel like me and Nathan are like, you know, have a new friendship there, and like that's just so you know, like making those connections, especially at our age, you know, it's harder when you got kids, responsibilities, so much going on, like,
and it's harder for men friends. It's harder for men too.
It absolutely is. I've seen multiple men recently in my practice with that issue that are just isolated. And I get it, man. I get it. Like it's hard when you get to our age. You're not in college anymore and you just go to the dorm next to you, you know, and like start bullshitting. Like it's a different dynamic now. So to like make these new connections, like it really, like this is important. Yeah, this means a lot. Mm-hmm. Again, like I always talk about, like if this is a passion of yours, you enjoy fantasy baseball, like you don't have to put content out there, but just connect with people that have this interest. And you never know, like a lot of times people are like not that far away from you, you know, like in terms of like if you're in like the tri-state area, meetups all the time and different events going on, like you can meet people that way, you know. Yeah, just I guess wanted to piggyback off what you said about just the importance of connection and just the value add it could have in your life. But
absolutely. You know, it's great because I think you touched on something that's really important there, which is, you know, when we first started doing this, however long ago it was now, it feels like it's been a long time because we talk to each other all the time. But, you know, there are people that are listening to this that are thinking, well, maybe I could get involved, or maybe I could write an article once a week, or maybe I could do a podcast. And my answer to that always is, hell yeah, you can.
Yeah,
go out and do it. Go out and do it. I mean, it's not like you and I are like Phi Beta Kappas or anything like that. We're not.
Well,
like,
I am. You're not. But okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could venture that and say, I mean, you are the guy that's like eating garlic and bone broth with the Phi Beta Kappa over here. So maybe you're onto something. But I'll tell you what, though, if it thickens hair, I want it because I'm getting this bald spot all of a sudden that is ferocious.
Oh boy! All right, all right. Just get that bone broth, baby. That's it.
All right, all right,
all right, man. I got to get out of here. Good chat. It was good seeing you. Next week we'll talk. We'll figure out who we're having on next week. But
I got a plan. I'll let you know what it is offline.
Okay. All right. Well, for Mike Carter, I'm Chris Torres. Thank you so much for listening to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.